Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today's podcast is going to be all about biohacking. I'm talking to Siim Lund. He's one of my favorite biohackers online. And you guys are going to love all this information about aging at the cellular level. Siim, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
Well, tell me a little bit, tell the audience a little bit about your background. Where do you live? Where are you from? And how did you get into biohacking?
Well, I'm living in Estonia, and yeah, I've pretty much been interested in some aspects of health and fitness all my life. I did focus a lot more on like gym and like bodybuilding when I was in my maybe 18 or 20 years old. But then I also started to learn a lot about longevity and anti-aging and just overall health to not neglect that as well. So I think I've always had like a important like perspective in terms of taking care of your health and longevity preemptively. Yeah, that's what I started to research more when I was maybe or during college, where I started to, write a blog about all the things I was doing and researching, and just over from there, it grew into a YouTube channel, and from there, I also wrote several books, started a podcast, and yeah, just that's how it kind of morphed into this, I don't know, personal brand or authorship that I have right now.
That's amazing. So, did you study this in college? Are you into biology, into biochemistry, or molecular bio?
I studied anthropology in university, and
So this is all self-taught, pretty much, self-researched and self-taught.
I think I did get like science education from the uni. I you know was I got like very good at writing in university. Like I
Yes.
got very good at writing essays and stuff, because in anthropology, like you don't. That's like the main thing that you do mostly for grades. There's not a lot of like exams. There's like essays and the, like writing for the exams, and that's why I like wrote many of them, got pretty good at it, and like figured out that I actually like to write and want to do it more as a, like a profession. And so it's about like a deliberate choice of I'm going to become a writer, and I'm just going to write about the things I like and the things I interest me.
Well, how old are you right now?
I'm 28 now. I
28.
got 28 in September.
Amazing. So you've developed this amazing brand and is focused on biohacking. Who are some of your biohacking heroes that you think are doing great work in longevity and anti-aging? Who do you love to hear what they're talking about?
Probably like the smartest person I follow is my co-author, who I write books with, Dr. James Nicolantonio. He's pretty much responsible for refuting this kind of misconceptions and fear or worry about salt. So he wrote like The Salt Fix, which is like a very popular book about salt. Actually, like that actually says that salt is actually very important, and salt isn't really inherently causing hypertension. It's more like the other factors there. Then there is Chris Masterjohn, who is also very intelligent. He's a PhD. He's kind of one of the first people who popularized but made it very scientific of like the paleo movement. He also like about this ancestral nutrition and that kind of thing, and he's also very thorough in his knowledge from the like a biohacker.
Amazing. I think one of the things that in biohacking, we see a lot of influencers popping up who, they say that they know what they're talking about, but their words are not always founded in science and research and publications and studies. So it's refreshing to see. I really like your content because you do base much of what you do on scientific research. What are your favorite biohacking techniques that you've incorporated into your lifestyle right now that you think the average adult human could do without too much stress?
It's like, what is biohacking and what is just healthy living? So I do like, pretty much follow a lot of the core fundamentals of a healthy lifestyle and longevity. Regular exercise, both cardio and resistance training. I sleep quite well. I stick to the circadian rhythms. I take a sauna regularly. I do some cold exposure. I do time-restricted eating. I don't overeat calories. But I think, like, yeah, my favorite ones are probably, like, I think exercise is probably like the biggest bang for your buck in terms of the results and effects. So, like, exercise will have like the most impactful effect on your metabolic health, body composition, and probably longevity as well. Like, if you were to have like a, exercise in a pill that would give you the same effects, then, everyone would take it and everyone would be just, fit and healthy. But obviously, it's, you have to kind of learn to love it or start to like it over time. I think, yeah, like, general exercise is like the number one thing that I think, if I didn't do anything else, but I only did the exercise, then I would still get like 80% of the results from there. Other things, my favorite ones are time-restricted eating, so, or intermittent fasting, which just means that you're confining your eating window in some way. I actually eat like 1 meal a day, but there's also like, 2 meals a day, or even like, 3 meals a day can also fit in that philosophy. The main idea is to just not eat around the clock, and definitely not eat immediately before bed, and not eat like, immediately after waking up. So there's like just some confinement. There's different ways to do it. There's like early time-restricted eating, there's late time-restricted eating. But
Better
yeah, the main.
one? What do you think is better, early or late? I'm just curious. I'm like a late night owl, so I just don't eat till very late. But I wonder if there's anything that's shown that the morning time restriction is better or the later.
Well, I think there's just more studies done with the early time-restricted eating, which, I mean, they both have been shown to have benefits, and they actually are very similar in terms of the metabolic results or effects. From a like a circadian biology side, I think early time-restricted eating maybe is somewhat better, but depends on like individuals as well. So there's like chronotypes between people. Some are, yeah, like early birds, other are night owls. Or it would be like most optimal for the sleep quality and like the, getting a lot of those like anti-aging benefits in your sleep would be to, not eat at least like 3 hours or 4 hours before bed. I think, but if you take it like too far, if you like stop eating 6 hours before bed, then it actually can also backfire. Like, people can just, get too hungry and they don't fall asleep. So it's a kind of a balance. You have to find like what works for best for you. But I think generally, it would be good to stop eating like, 3 hours before bed, in most cases.
Yeah, I think evenings definitely are the time where autophagy is occurring at the cellular level and rebuilding, and time to power down all the systems. For what supplements are you taking in terms of improving your overall health?
Yeah, well, I have like a lot of supplements I take. I haven't counted exactly, but I would maybe say like 20 a day at least.
20 a day? Oh my
Or I
gosh.
mean, some of the doses are just bigger. So, like, for example, I take glucosamine, which is good for joints and cardiovascular disease prevention. But it works only if you take like, larger doses. So you need like 2 to 3 grams. I generally take supplements that you don't really get from food, but a few supplements that I do believe are very proven, shown to have benefits, are like glycine. So that's like pretty much my favorite supplement. Glycine is actually interesting that it's one of the first amino acids on Earth that facilitated the creation of life. So, like, even like, 3.5 billion years ago, when there wasn't no life on Earth, like in this, very hot water, there was like this algae and kind of this microorganisms that were developed, that they were able to actually survive thanks to glycine. So glycine helps them to, tolerate the extreme conditions and survive. And that's actually what they think that enabled life to form on Earth, was the glycine amino acid. And yeah, like, glycine is also involved with in your body. It's involved with glutathione synthesis, which is the master antioxidant. So you need it for pretty much everything. So you need it for slowing down aging. You need it for preventing diseases and combating the oxidative stress of modern life. You also use glycine for creatine synthesis. So that helps with energy production and exercise and muscle mass, even cognition and brain health. Glycine is also for heme, so hemoglobin and oxygenation of the tissues. And obviously, glycine, one of the main roles is collagen turnover. So it helps with collagen turnover, and like 1/3 of collagen is glycine.
That's
So
very.
every third amino acid in collagen is a glycine, and yeah, it helps with joints. It helps with yeah, skin. It helps with, yeah, like just the benefits that you get from collagen as well. I take collagen peptides as well, more so now than in the past. And like the third supplement I think would be also good to mention is a creatine. So creatine monohydrate, it's by the International Sports Society, it's considered to be like the most researched and most backed up supplement of all time, pretty much. So it has like, I don't know, like up to maybe like thousands of studies by now that show that it does help with muscle strength, muscle power, muscle mass, and even like bone density, cognition, slows down, yeah, like the
What dose are
wasting.
you taking? What dose are you taking? I'm gonna have to go buy some. I'm definitely not on that.
Creatine monohydrate, so it's the like just the very standard most generic creatine monohydrate that has like those benefits.
Nice. And then how about like NAD, NMR, resveratrol? What other goodies are you doing?
I don't take resveratrol because I think there hasn't been enough studies to show that it would have. At least that's what I came to the conclusion like a few months ago when I was doing more research about it. And yeah, like there hasn't been enough research to suggest it actually has like longevity, life extension benefits, but it may have like some other effects. Like it definitely has benefits for the brain and diabetes and those kind of things. The reason I'm not taking it is that I found that resveratrol actually can counteract some of the benefits that you get from exercise, especially VO2 max and yeah, like this anaerobic performance. So I'm not taking it for that reason, because I don't think it's gonna be like worth it. The boosters, so yeah, I take NMN quite regularly. Yeah, people say like, should you take nicotinamide riboside or NMN? I think it doesn't generally matter. Both work or both raise energy levels. Just NMN, I found more convenient and easily accessible. I also take another NAD booster that actually feeds into like a different pathway of making NAD. So there's different pathways that your body makes NAD. There's, the pathways that you get from food, and there's the salvage pathway or the recycling pathway. And the recycling pathway is actually more important than anything else because, when you make NAD, most of it goes back into recycling. And if the recycling pathway isn't working properly, then you're like losing out on a lot of the NAD that you make, whether that it comes from supplements or whether it comes from exercise or wherever. So you need to have the salvage pathway working. And one supplement, niacinamide, NAM, actually supports the salvage pathway. So that's actually like a form of niacin, which is very cheap and very like, yeah, old supplement, very known supplement that, yeah, feeds into the NAD recycling, and I take that as well. Even if I don't take the NMN, I still take the niacinamide pretty much every day.
And then, are you also doing? I know you'd use something called Katsu bands when you're doing your muscle work. Can you talk a little bit about what that is and why it's beneficial for resistance muscle training?
Yeah, so the Katsu bands are a form of blood flow moderation training. You have these bands that restrict the blood flow, so they let the blood go in, but they don't let it go out as much. So you get like this pooling of blood in the limbs. So it accumulates there, and the effect of that, besides improving blood flow and improving arterial health, or like this capillary health, is also that your body, like, because like the kind of blood is pushing against the artery walls slightly, it creates this tension, then your body thinks that you're experiencing like a lot of heavy resistance. So your body thinks that you're actually lifting a lot of heavier weight than you really are. So you can just put on the bands and do like some very light weights, and it actually mimics like a heavier workout without causing as much muscle damage and actually improving like stem cell proliferation and blood flow and recovery. So this is especially used a lot by people who have had injuries, like some broken bone or like a torn whatever ligament, and they actually speeds up recovery fast, and especially like older individuals as well, like the elderly who have sarcopenia. And I mean, you can't let your grandma do like heavy deadlifts. They need to, it's gonna be too intense for them, and using the Katsu bands can actually still provide them with a stimulus without that much intensity and heavy load. And obviously exercise and muscle mass are associated with longevity and reduce mortality. So when you get old, you need to have like some lean muscle tissue, so that you, and especially muscle strength, so that you know, you wouldn't be more susceptible to hip fractures, and you wouldn't like get diabetes. So yeah, like when the elderly, like, you know, they break a hip and they fall, then it's like, you know, all downhill from there usually. Like the likelihood that a person will die after breaking a hip in their like 60s or 70s, like, I don't know, it's like, I don't know the exact percentage, but it's like, you know, almost like 60% or 70% or something like that within the next year after breaking the hip, because they're like, you know, they become immobile, they're not moving, they start to get fat and they get diabetes. And yeah, when you're old, then it's very important to gonna have this physical activity, especially the resistance training. Like, it's much more important to do resistance training in your older years than it is in your youth, because that, you know, when you get older, you lose muscle mass, you lose bone density, you lose strength, and all those things are, you know, incredibly protective against old aging.
Well, in aesthetics and plastic surgery now, we have magnetic machines, EMF machines that cause muscle contraction, where you can strap on a device and it does 20,000 push-ups for you, or 20,000 sit-ups in 30 minutes. Do you think that that kind of muscular contraction is going to be the same benefit overall for sarcopenia versus like actually doing the hard work? Because I can envision a society where we strap on devices and do repetitive muscle contractions and stimulations, but is that the same, you think, as doing the hard work of exercise?
Well, there are.
It does actually give you abs, and it does give you a better butt, and it actually gives the muscle stimulation. Right. Yeah.
Well, they like the EMS, the electromuscular stimulation devices, like the butterfly abs and stuff.
Yes.
Even like the more primitive ones, they, at least like in studies, they find that it helps with recovery. So like the electrifying the muscles, at certain, like there are more, of course, like more advanced devices, like Power Dot is, I think, one that I've used actually, and it does give you like a pretty good, like, you know, effect with intensity. It's going to be like still like a bit like uncomfortable to do it. Yeah, you can definitely like, you know, hack it in a way that you can get some benefits, or you, like the minimal effective threshold probably to a certain extent with those devices as well. It's just, it might be a bit, you know, at some point you still have to experience some discomfort probably, like, yeah. maybe just the device itself will become slightly uncomfortable eventually.
It's interesting, because as society wants to look better and we're living longer, we still get, you know, frail and muscle atrophy, and we are going to eventually become a society that just straps on these devices, but maybe you don't get the endorphin release. Maybe you don't feel the cytokine surge. It's not exactly the same as true exercise. I don't know. Or maybe it is. Maybe.
Yeah, I think probably like VR or something is going to be also very engaged, because, you know, people love to like dance or whatever, but they don't like to work out. So like if you gamify the workout in a way that if you have the VR on and you're doing like something else, then that could probably be, you know, I think most people will gravitate more towards that, because you're probably going to do some more stuff in the VR at some point.
So I wanted to ask you about Stronger by Stress. Tell me a little bit about Stronger by Stress.
Stronger by Stress is one of the books that I wrote 2 years ago. And it talks about, you know, how do you leverage different kinds of stressors in our life to become healthier, stronger, and more resilient. And it's kind of centered around the concept of hormesis, which means, you know, what doesn't kill me makes me stronger, basically. And, you know, different life forms, plants, animals, humans, they have this innate ability to, yeah, pretty much get stronger from like a moderate amount of this positive stress. And those positive stressors usually are, you know, exercise, some fasting, saunas, cold, but also like, you know, psychologically, you can also leverage that same concept psychologically and mentally. So yeah, like the book just talked about different strategies to achieve that. How does hormesis work? How do you balance of, you know, how much is too much? And we actually also turned that book, or like we made like a documentary called the same, Stronger by Stress, which is kind of, you know, based on the book, but it also goes more, or the theme is more like about biohacking of like the cast and the other individuals in the movie. They're yeah, like more like biohackers, and how do you, you know, biohack your health and resilience in this time of, you know, great stress and great turmoil, because, you know, you can't avoid the stress and you can't avoid these unpredictable events. They're going to happen like anyway. It's, you know, the adaptability is what we need to cultivate, and we can only like prepare in advance against those events.
Mm-hmm. Is there a certain mindset that you use for that? How do you motivate yourself in the mornings when you get up? How do you face high cortisol stress levels in modern society?
Well, I don't actually get that stressed out, or I mean, like, you know, I do work long hours, but I like enjoy it. It's, you know, fun and rewarding and fulfilling. So I don't really get that stressed out. The only stress in my life is, yeah, like maybe taking too many cold showers or exercising too much or not sleeping enough. So those are more like self-imposed stressors every once in a while. I mean, like, yeah, motivation, I don't like rely on motivation, or I don't really, I do like feel motivated if I'm like working on a project that I really like and that kind of thing. But most of the time I'm just doing things, like I'm doing the exercise because, you know, I enjoy it. And I think, yeah, it's just become like a habit, a habitual part of my everyday routine.
You're a very disciplined person. Like, I also appreciate the science behind it, but you have to be a little bit of a stoic to get up and get into a cold shower. Like, I've tried. It's just very hard. It's hard to make yourself uncomfortable, even with the knowledge that it's going to give you, you know, cellular benefits or...
Yeah, I guess you have to, like, you know, baby step into it, or... do gradually. So I mean, yeah, like, it doesn't make sense to run for a marathon immediately if you never even run like a 5k or something. So it has to be gradual, so it's less intimidating. If you like go step by step, then yeah, you're first of all gonna experience less side effects, because yeah, if you go for a marathon without training, then you're gonna, you know, actually get injured or overtrained. So it makes sense, and it's important to do gradually, so that, you know, the entire concept of stress and hormesis is subjective, and it depends on like the individual's level of stress adaptation, of where do they start at, so that it causes less of these negative side effects and that they will only get the benefits. From a mindset side, then like stoicism is a part of it, of not really letting yourself be controlled by your, let's say, emotions, or not controlled by your let's say distractions in your head, or procrastinations or whatever. It's more about, yeah, these things, or like more like gratitude as well. Like, if you train yourself to deal with these stressors, then obviously like everything else in your life will also seem better. Like if you do take a cold shower, or if you do exercise, then I mean, it's more like fulfilling to be in a warm bed, or to I don't know, have a nice meal or something like that. You know, that is like, yeah, just, you know, modern life, we don't have anything difficult physically that much. We can live in a way that doesn't tax us physically at all, and I think, in my opinion, this kind of just makes us too soft, you know, or it makes us too vulnerable to these unpredictable events that will happen eventually. Like, we do like to think that we live in a, like, a bubbled society, that nothing bad could ever happen to us, but as like a normalcy bias, like, we're just so used to being things normal, and we're not like mentally prepared for things going the other way. So yeah, you just have to, like, you know, keep that adaptation muscle alive in some shape or form.
So much of the biohacking community, like yourself, I see you as like an Olympic athlete of biohacking. Like, you are really on the ball, and you're like dedicated, and you're doing it every single day of the week. And then it's harder for those of us who are softer, who like eat a slice of pizza and like a glass of wine here and there. And so I just, I'm just.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think those are not, at least like from the food side, like you can still have, let's say, unhealthy food or something that it's like the amount and moderation is key. Yeah. Like, I think, yeah, like everyone, even like in Christmas or something, I'm not going to be like this sparked on that on the Christmas side, or
You'll
you
have
know,
a
it's
Christmas
from a
cookie.
diet side, you can get away with a lot. It's more of like, yeah, because like I said, I think like exercise is probably the biggest lever for overall health and longevity. Like, you exercise will give you the 80% of the results in almost all of the things that you want in terms of health and body composition and like vitality and things like that.
What are your views on alcohol? It's such a big part of modern society. I'm sure in Estonia, people drink a lot. What do you think about alcohol and how it affects the brain, the cell, metabolism?
Yeah, well, some people say that any amount of alcohol is like there's like irreversible damage, even if you like drink one drink. I think that alcohol is probably like a hormetic stressor, like that in small amounts, it's still okay. And at least, like, you know, in the longevity hotspots, people drink, you know, also like in small amounts. So I think it's not, at least at worst, it's like, or at Yeah, at worst, it's like, you know, probably insignificant, or it doesn't have any like actual effects in like a few drinks per week. But at best, it could have like a small, you know, longevity benefit as well. But I think it only applies to, yeah, like if you drink like maybe two or three drinks per week at most. You don't want, I think it also like depends on how much in one sitting. Like if you drink three drinks in one sitting, then and you get intoxicated, like then that's probably, yeah, like harmful. But if you like spread it out, like you have, you know, half a drink every other day or something, then it's probably a positive, or not a positive, but you know, at least like a non not insignificant effect. Because yeah, like I mean, alcohol is a toxin, or you know, ethanol, and can cause obviously harm in excess, but it's also like your body boosts some antioxidant defenses like glutathione in response to the ethanol. So I mean, yeah, like it's a hormetic stress, like many different of these similar, you know, compounds like coffee and these plant polyphenols also have like this hormetic effect in small doses. But yeah, like with alcohol, you probably have to be like a bit more conservative with the amounts to get away with it.
Have you tested your biogenetic profile or your epigenetic, any kind of testing or studies that you've done on yourself to kind of quantify, like, you know, where your genetics might require you to take more supplementation or less, or also to look at your biologic versus chronologic age?
Yeah, I have done my DNA test for my genes. I don't remember anything like very specific that I have to worry about. Some interesting things were like I have like bad gluten and lactose tolerance genes, but I can eat like all the gluten and dairy I want, or like I don't have like, I think that's a good example of like epigenetics. Like yeah, I have never had like any food intolerances or anything like that, and when I was young, I like drank raw milk, and that's probably like helps with that as well. Other things I don't remember that I could, or there wasn't anything like significant enough for me to remember that, okay, I definitely need to take this supplement, or need to be careful with cholesterol or something like that. But from I have also taken like a DNA age test, or a DNA methylation age test that looks at your biological age, and I did it 2 years ago, and it said I was like 9 years younger than my chronological age. So I took it when I was 25, and it said I was a 16. So yeah, and I've also taken like the there's also like this inner age by Insight Tracker that looks at the blood markers, and then creates like this biological age. That said, I was 18.
Which company does the DNA testing?
But DNA methylation age.
Is that something that you think all humans should do? We should all be kind of looking at our aging process and how the environment and oxidation, everything else is taking us down.
Yeah, well, I think it's too early to say that that's definitely like your, you know, actual biological age, or that it would matter. Like I think, you know, let's say you're biological age is 5 years younger, but your life expectancy is still, you know, whatever, like hypothetically 70 versus someone who has good genes, their life expectancy is going to be, you know, 85, even if they're 5 years older than their biological age. Yeah, I think that's, you know, I think it's very early to say that the DNA methylation tests are, you know, super accurate. They definitely can tell you if something is, you know, the state of your health and body right now. But I think more important is definitely to do like the blood work, just the regular biomarkers, to look at your cholesterol, blood glucose, insulin, IGF-1, calcium, triglycerides, and blood pressure, and those things. I think those are more impactful on a like annual basis. Like, right, it's more important to track those things every year and see like what's going on, and especially do it like soon, or, you know, early, catch it preemptively, because, you know, you develop metabolic syndrome and heart disease over the course of decades usually, and or even like, you know, shorter in some cases. So you need to be like, you know, keep your hand on the pulse for the blood markers, because the blood markers reflect your health and reflect if, you know, you're heading down the wrong path or you're heading on the right path.
Right. In terms of your diet, what would you say are like your top five favorite foods that are just really good, healthy and antioxidant full, or what do you like in your diet on the regular?
I like, some of my favorite foods are probably like cottage cheese, because it's high in protein and calcium. So it's like my main source of calcium generally. I like salmon. It's like nice omega-3s, and the fish skin also has collagen. Number three, probably like cauliflower is my favorite like vegetable. Number four, I like eggs generally are nice, choline and also protein. And last, number five, probably like apples or some berries, something like that.
That's good. Awesome. And then talk a little bit about any projects that you have coming up or coursework that you're offering for people who are interested to get into biohacking.
To get into biohacking, then the movie Stronger by Stress is actually a good introduction, because we cover like everything. So it's strongerbystress.com. Uh-huh. And for the anti-aging and like longevity, I have a new book coming out. It's called The Collagen Cure, and it's with Dr. James Di Nicolantonio. We co-authored it. And yeah, it talks about collagen and glycine, the importance of it, what's the studies, and yeah, like how much, when, and et cetera.
That's so exciting. I'm a big believer in collagen. I have my own collagen peptide powder. I'm going to have to send you some. But tell me briefly, like, what do you think our audience should know about why collagen is so critical?
Yeah, well, collagen, actually like 30% of your body is collagen. So, you know, it's actually the biggest or the most significant protein in your body. With age, your collagen goes down. Even starting in your 20s, you lose like 10% of your collagen per decade. So if you're in 70, then you have lost, yeah, like 50% of your collagen, which is very significant. That's where all the like skin aging wrinkles come from. That's where the joint issues come from, and yeah, you do need to get, you know, the collagen precursors to synthesize collagen, but, you know, the best source of those precursors is collagen itself. So you just take the collagen peptides that get broken down into those yeah, like small amino acids, the peptides that then help to exert those effects and synthesize collagen in your body itself. And yeah, I guess that's the main reason to take it, because many people aren't getting actually any collagen, or they don't get a lot of the collagen in their diet. And yeah, on top of that, I think glycine is also important to take for the same reason besides the collagen, because you don't get like, you only get like 30% of glycine from collagen. Yeah, you need like a lot more glycine.
There's still a lot of misinformation out there, where even I hear dermatologists telling their patients that taking a collagen peptide is not beneficial. It's just going to get digested by their GI tract and it's never going to make it to where it needs to go. What do you say to that?
Well, it depends on the type of collagen. Like the peptides definitely will. And I mean, there are studies that actually, you know, look at taking collagen peptides, and there are, yeah, significant differences and changes in the wrinkles and skin elasticity and moisturization and even like joints and arthritic symptoms as well.
Yeah, there are many studies that support the fact that at the right concentration, the peptides spill over the GI tract and enter the bloodstream. And in fact, they almost act as a signaling molecule because your body senses a breakdown product peptide and wants to remodel using those peptides. So I'm a big believer, and I think people who start taking collagen do notice a difference in their skin and hydration, and you miss it if you're not taking it, because I know when I run out, I start to feel different. So that's awesome advice. Is there any other advice that you can tell us? So it's one thing our listeners might be surprised to know about you. Well, you recently got married, so that's awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah, that's good news. Thank you.
Is your wife a biohacker too? Has married life been harder to be so disciplined?
No, I mean, she's also, like very into health and just all the same things. Kind of, we have a very similar routine, and we exercise and do red light therapy together, and take the same supplements.
Nice. That's awesome. Well, maybe there'll be little baby biohackers in the future.
Eventually, yeah.
Wonderful. Well, I have really enjoyed talking to you. It's a pleasure. You're as intelligent in person as you are on all of your medias that you have out there. Where can people find you on Instagram and your various handles?
Yeah, thanks. And my Instagram is at Seem Lund. On YouTube, I'm also Seem Lund. And it's Seem Lund podcast, and the website is seemlund.com.
Yes, we'll link it in our information below. It's spelled, can you spell it for us?
Simland.
There you go.
Simland.
Well, I can't wait to read your new book all about collagen and the collagen cure. And I hope you guys took notes learning about the supplements and the different things that Seem is doing. These are things I want to try and incorporate into my regimen, because it's not enough to just get older. We want to not be frail. We want to be healthy. We want to have longevity, but more important, we want to have like vitality and not become decrepit as we age. That's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, DRKAY. You'll see me doing amazing things with people's faces. And our website is the same, beautybydrk.com. That's where you can find my collagen peptide powder and so many other great products. I also have an awesome hair, skin, and nail supplement, which I'm going to send you both. Seem, I can't wait to see your next project. Thanks so much for being on with us today. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.